glad I followed Robert because I was getting a little worried that I wasn't talking about proteins. I'm talking about the soil ecosystem. And this is really work I did as a graduate student at the University of Saskatchewan, and then took a brief internship at the University of Maine, and then came back to the University of Guelph as an assistant professor and continued a bit of this work. And we actually decided to study herbicide-tolerant crops just because the acreage of these crops were by far larger than the insect-resistant crops at the time that we started. And I was working in Saskatchewan at the time, and the canola crop there was greater than 90% genetically modified when it was introduced, so we decided to look at canola. And as I came at this more from an ecological standpoint than a regulatory standpoint, and the question of whether a single gene insert could actually affect the ecology of the soil system really is what interested me. So we looked at non-target effects, and we concentrated on primarily on soil microbial biodiversity, and specifically interactions in the rhizosphere and the interior of the roots. And the idea was that any change in root exudation patterns or root structure could affect the diversity of the microbial community, and this could have impacts on soil ecosystem function and quality through changes in nutrient cycling or organic matter turnover or plant growth promoting organisms. So we really targeted the soil microbial community. And the first question we asked was whether the microbial communities associated with genetically modified canola were significantly different from communities associated with non-GM canola. And this was all done as field trials. It was a multi-field year study, so it was 3 field years and 5 field sites each year, and set up as sort of a randomized complete block design in the field. Our canola looks like this. And we included 8 different varieties of canola in the first study. The first 4 listed here were all considered conventional varieties. In Canada, Clearfield, which is imidazolinone tolerant variety, is not genetically modified, but was, and so it's not considered a genetically modified variety because it doesn't have a gene insertion, it was made by mutation. And we included 1 Brassica rapa variety, which is a different species, but all the rest were Brassica napus. We had 3 Liberty Link or glufosinate ammonium tolerant canolas and 1 Roundup Ready glyphosate tolerant canola. Quest, which is the Roundup Ready variety, and Excel were as close to sister lines as we could get near estrogenic lines. So I think it's been said several times that the microbial community is in the soil is greater than 90% non-culturable, so we used a variety of different techniques to try to assess microbial diversity. We did lipid extraction and a fatty acid profile. We also did a DNA extraction, an amplification of 16S, which gets the universal soil community, and we did an analysis called TRFLP, and we also made an attempt at getting a functional diversity of the community through carbon utilization profiles, or CLPP. And some of these methods, they were appropriate at the time, and now I think there's new methods that we could use to be profiling the microbial community, but I think we did a pretty good job at the time. Our plots were set up as you can see here we're sampling within the crop during mid-flowering, and each plot had a boundary of winter canola. We also included a fallow soil plot in our after our second year to get an idea of the soil microbial community without plants. So a lot of this data is presented as a principal component analysis, which is just a multivariate analysis, and basically it just summarizes. So the closer 2 points are on the graph, the more similar the microbial community is. And in the first study we did, you can't see it here, but it's published in 2001, we found that there were differences in the microbial communities associated with our genetically modified compared to the conventional varieties. But this was really dependent on which soil we were in. So we sampled five different soil types, and we saw that at each soil zone, for example, here at Melfort, we didn't see any differences in the microbial communities in the varieties. But at Eyebrow, the same plant varieties grown at a different field site, sampled at the same time, we did see differences. And we wanted to know whether how these differences compared to just the effect of growing the plant. And what we see when we include a fallow plot for comparison is that even if there were differences in the microbial communities between like varietal differences, they were really minimal compared to just the presence of the plant in that soil. So plant genetics had some effect on the microbial diversity, but it was really minimal compared to the effect of the rhizosphere itself. And the next question we had was whether these differences we saw actually persisted into the next growing season and whether they were temporary. So what we did was sampled at 6 points throughout the growing season before the crop was grown, June, July, and mid-flowering, August, and in October after harvest, and then we went back to the same field sites before the next crop was planted and sampled the same soils again. And what we found was the microbial community changed considerably over the field season, and where we started in May, it changed once with plant growth, and then once plants were removed from the system, it sort of reverted back to its original state. So plant growth had a big impact on the community, which would be expected. And the other thing we saw is that the microbial communities, the effect of each variety on the microbial communities changed over the field season too. So in May, there were before the plants were grown, there was no significant differences between the communities. In June, there was differences between a fallow plot and the rhizosphere communities. In July, we saw differences between our transgenic and our non-transgenic plant. But these differences were minimized again in August. We saw some differences in October. But by April, the next field year, before the next field season, all the differences between the communities were eliminated. So the one interesting thing was this October time point, and we were thinking that this might have to do with differences in decomposition rates of these two varieties, but we didn't look into that in this study. So what we saw was there's seasonal variation in community structure, and that changes due to plant genetics were really temporary and dependent on the presence of the plants in that site. And the next thing we wanted to consider was how field site itself affected microbial communities associated with this GM canola. And each field year we looked at least five different field sites across Saskatchewan. So, and they were a range of soil types. And in Saskatchewan there's a gradient of organic matter content from low to high. So we tried to pick a variety of soils. What we found with genetic profiling was not unexpectedly, if you just look at the soils with no plants, the microbial communities are significantly different in some of the sites. There are some that are similar. And this just indicates that the native microbial communities are different in each soil zone. And when you grow plants in these different soil zones, then this is an example of growing a GM canola innovator. We saw that they affected the microbial communities. In fact, at some of the sites, the communities became more similar with the growth of a canola plant, But at one of our sites, Den Home was still quite different from the other variety, from the other field sites. And Den Home actually was a unique site for a number of our measurements. It was also the highest organic matter site, and that's something that we talked a lot about clay content, but organic matter also has a similar effect on proteins and gene persistence. So soil type and field site influence biodiversity, and also importantly there's a field site by plant variety interaction. So if a plant variety affects a microbial community at one field site, it might affect it totally different at another field site. So it's important to do tests in a number of different sites. And the one thing that came out of this study was we looked at the genetic, biodiversity of the microbial community, but we didn't look at specific functional groups. So we saw that the microbial community might have changed, but we didn't know how and how important this was to ecosystem function. So one of the things we looked at when it came to Guelph was the impact of genetically modified crops on the function of specific important symbiotic relationships. So we looked at mycorrhiza and rhizobium in a growth chamber study. And this was on Roundup Ready soybean. And we looked at 9 different varieties. And we inoculated with both mycorrhiza and rhizobium. And we saw that there was significant effect of plant variety on the mycorrhizal symbiosis. But it was not directly linked to genetic modification. So there were varieties of genetically modified canola, that soybean, that had high colonization compared to conventional varieties and some that had low. So there wasn't any real trend for genetically due to genetic modification. These three lines of they're all Roundup Ready soybean. These three lines were considered sister lines, so there's pretty large variability based on even between sister lines. And the similar thing was found with Bradyrhizobium symbiosis, where there was an effect of plant variety, but not consistent with a genetically modified effect. And the question came out of the first studies was we were looking at genetic modification alone, and it's a good question in a university research study, but it's not really doesn't really apply to the real world because you're never going to grow a Roundup Ready plant without the presence of Roundup. So and the idea is that the management of these crops, so the application of Roundup, may actually in itself have an effect on microbial communities. And the use of glyphosate has been going up along with the introduction of these genetically modified crops. So glyphosate has been suggested that it could have a non-target toxicity. It's a source of carbon and phosphorus, so this could affect the microbial community. So we wanted to see how the management system also affected microorganisms. And the one thing we looked at was the impact of Roundup Ready cropping systems on litter decomposition. And when we looked just at genotype, we found no real reduction in corn, in this case, litter decomposition. We also looked at soybean in the field. So we did see differences in lignin content and C-to-N ratio of these residues, but it didn't translate to decomposition differences in the field. But what we did see was over a field trial of several field years with a number of different sites, overall the management system, so where Roundup was applied to a Roundup Ready crop, there was a reduction in crop litter decomposition over time. So the bars represent the mass remaining of the crop. And this was corn residue put into soybean field and left for 4 months, and then we went back and measured biomass of the decomposed residue. And we did see less litter decomposition But it was affected by variety, so it wasn't necessarily consistent over all the field trials tested. So genotype really didn't have any effect on symbiosis or decomposition, but management systems did have some effect. And the last thing we were concerned about is horizontal gene transfer to native microflora. And the idea is, this is one of my grad students, David Levy Booth, who this is a literature review in soil biology biochemistry. And the idea is that these plants release exudates and recombinant DNA into the soil. And this extracellular DNA has several paths that it can follow. It can persist in the soil, and I think that's what we've talked about, by binding to humic acids or different soil minerals. And then most of it gets rapidly degraded by microbial enzymes and enters the metabolism cycle, so it's used for its nutrient value. The other option is that some of the DNA can possibly get transformed by native microflora, and if it does get transformed, it could then enter the microbial genome and possibly be expressed. And this has been shown in soil microcosm studies by groups that have shown in where there's competent cells present, you can get natural transformation. But we wanted to know whether this was going to be something that could happen in a field system under cropping practices that were realistic. So this was a four-year field study where we had two field sites in Ontario and one in Lethbridge, and it was either alternating corn, soybean, Roundup Ready rotation, or continuous corn, or this is our site at Woodstock where both corn and soybean were grown in similar field years. And we sampled four times throughout the year, and what we did was take 10 samples from within the plot and bulk the soil together and did a DNA extraction. And we detected the recombinant DNA through quantitative real-time PCR. So we developed primers for the CP4-EPS-PS gene, which is the Roundup Ready gene, and a molecular beacon, so we could do quantitative PCR. And we also wanted to have a control gene to look at in our conventional varieties. So we developed primers and probes for this Zine gene, which is in corn, and we also did one for soybean. And one of the questions was whether the EPSPS gene reacted similarly to other genes that would be released in the soil, and we did find exactly the same patterns, whether it was a recombinant DNA or any other kind of DNA that's released to the soil. And what we saw that there was recombinant DNA released, and it persisted in very low amounts into the next field year. And in fact, we did detect some recombinant DNA up to 2 years in the soil after a Roundup Ready crop had been grown. But it was affected by a number of things, and the major effect was whether there was crop present. So in August, the plants were present, and the amount of recombinant DNA was much higher than in October after harvest when plants were removed. And it also was affected by crop type. So corn had higher amounts of DNA released compared to soybean, and that could be due to plant biomass or exudation patterns. We're not sure. There was also a location and year effect. So in October, after the impact of the plants being there was minimized, we saw that there was higher amounts in our Laura field site, and this site had not any higher clay content, but higher organic matter. We also saw that depending on field year. At Woodstock, for example, in 2004 was a really dry year, and we got less recombinant DNA in the soil compared to other field years. So we found that there was rapid degradation of plant DNA in the soil environment. So there's really limited opportunity for natural transformation of plant DNA into the population for soil microbes. And in conclusion, changes associated with genetically modified plants exist, but are really minor compared to normal changes in the community associated with things like the rhizosphere effect or sampling date or field site. So I think it's important to include a control in these type of tests to put the changes you see into perspective. And environmental assessments of the impact of GM crops on these non-target organisms really need to be conducted in a variety of field sites and years, because the overall effect that we see in all of our studies is that there's a huge variability depending on field site and year. So I just wanted to acknowledge work done by my grad student David Levy Booth, Jeff Powell, and a postdoc Rob Golden, and the Soil Microbiology Lab at U of S and the Applied Soil Ecology Lab at U of G, and NSERC for funding. So, thank you.
There's time for one quick question.
Did you use the gene-specific probe for your real-time quantitative
PCR? We developed the probes.
So did you check the soil microbiota for that specific probe?
We have done a transformation test to see if there was transformation. We haven't come up, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack, but we haven't come up with any kind of transformation. But the EPSPS gene is native to microorganisms, so you can't just do like a general, this one is specific because of the CP4 cons, it's a specific probe for that plant DNA, but it's not. Yeah, I don't know if it would, I don't think you could, you actually couldn't tell if it was within a bacteria or, because when you do the DNA extraction, it's no longer, like you don't know if it's this the gene in the soil or something that's being transformed into a microorganism, so.
Thank you.